Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to the review of All Rights GTLD's PDP Working Group call held on the 20th of December, 2017. In the interest of time, there will be no roll call as we have quite a few participants. Attendance will be taken by the Adobe Connect room. If you are only on the audio bridge, could you please let yourself be known now? Hearing no names, I would like to remind all to please state your name before speaking for transcription purpose, and to please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I'll turn it back over to our co-chair, Phil Corwin. Please begin.
Thanks, Terry, and happy holidays and best wishes for the new year to everyone. This will be our final working group call in 2017. Our next call will be, we'll get to that, early in January 2018. I note that my co-chair, J. Scott Evans, is on with us today. I don't yet see Kathy Kleiman. I believe she's supposed to participate. And I also note that despite being listed as an apology, that Susan Payne is with us, and welcome, Susan. So let's get right to our agenda, which we had a call on November 30th. That was our APAC call. Oh, and welcome, Kathy. I see you just got in the chat room. That was a lightly attended call held at a very late hour for those of us in the U.S. and the middle of the night for the European participants in order to accommodate Pacific Rim members of the working group and those from elsewhere in Asia. And the chair of the full GNSO Council, Heather Forrest, who's with us today, put forward a proposed methodology for dealing with our approach to URS questions. So and I think that's what's before us in the chat room. So maybe staff can explain what we have, the document in the chat room, and then we can begin a discussion of it with that background having been provided. So, Mary, I see your hand up. Why don't you go ahead?
Yes, Phil, thank you. Hi, everyone. This is Mary from staff. So just a quick recap about this document. This is a draft document, and it's not actually a new document. As you may recall, the last full working group call, there was a request that all the current drafts that had been circulated be compiled into a single document for easier reference. So this single document is what you see in front of you, is what was posted on the wiki page yesterday and circulated, I believe, at the end of last week. It is in three parts. The first part is the draft list of suggested topics for the URS review. And the idea, as you'll recall, is that we would group the various topics that were unearthed by the charter questions into literally topics, and that for each of these topics, that a set of identical or at least highly similar high-level questions be asked on each of these topics. You will see the suggested high-level questions that we received so far. At the top of this document in bold, there are five. And what staff has noted is that while some of them may be broadly applicable to all the topics, a few may need to be tweaked. So the idea, if you scroll further down to page 1 and 2, under part 1 of this document, is that working with Heather, staff has looked at all the list of charter questions and come up with this list of draft suggested topics. And we've grouped them by general chronological order of a URS proceeding, starting with a complaint and ending with questions about providers and a broad alternative that had been suggested. So this is part 1, and as noted, all these suggested topics are up for discussion, but whatever the list of suggested topics end up being, assuming that this proposed approach is acceptable to the group, the same set of high-level questions will be asked. Then in part two of this document, that is really just the accompanying background, and that is to show that the list of draft suggested topics so far, which you see on the first left-hand side column in part two, that reflects the list that you saw in part one. They are matched with the corresponding charter questions, unedited. So that shows you where the list of topics was derived from, and it completes the whole list of charter questions. Then finally, in part three of this document, that was a separate document, and that is the co-chair's statement on URS review. And I note that this is a separate topic on today's agenda. So, Phil, for purposes of agenda item number two, we would presumably be looking mostly at the list of topics and high-level questions in part one, but with the note that the table in part two is meant to accompany that list of topics. And so back to you, Phil.
Yeah, thanks for that background explanation, Mary. And yes, let me, in regard to the third piece in this document, which is the co-chair's note that went out a while back regarding on November 30th regarding an approach to evaluating the actual administration of the URS by the three accredited providers. Let's put that on the back burner for now and see if we can get through this discussion of this approach to the charter questions first. And if we do, we'll get to a discussion of the co-chair's statement. And if not, we can pick that up early in the new year. So let me see if I can summarize, and then let me see if the if Heather, as the originator of this approach, wants to comment at all before opening it up to general comment by working group members. What we have here is proposed high-level questions. We have five at the top of the first page that would be applied to various topics within our within the scope of our URS review. And then below that, we've got proposed topics for organizing the various issues brought up in the original charter questions. And then we have below that in part two a table which takes those suggested URS review topics and matches existing charter questions to them. So this is primarily a proposed way to organize the charter questions before further refinement and consolidation, as well as a suggested approach for how to address responding to the charter questions once we've completed that preliminary test. So I'm going to stop there. That's my personal understanding, and it may be correct or not. I invite Heather Forrest, who was the proponent of this on our last call in November, to speak if she wishes to add any detail or color to our discussion before opening it up for general working group discussion. And I see Heather has put in the chat room that her only
Heather
comment.
Who's
that? Who was just speaking?
Hey, Phil, it's me. It's Heather.
Oh, okay. I hadn't seen your hand up, so I didn't know if you were going to talk or just put something in the chat. But go ahead, please.
Sorry, Phil. I didn't mean to distract. I'm more than happy for that comment in the chat to Stan. That was really all that I intended to say and didn't mean to interrupt. Thanks.
Okay. Okay. And I see a question from George in the chat room that I'd ask staff to respond to, whether the questions in the Part 2 table at the moment are just the original charter questions, and if there may be some other additional charter questions that the working group wants to add to the charter questions, but whether those are included yet or not. And then once Mary responds, I'm going to call on Susan Paynes. But Mary, go ahead, just on George's question in the chat.
Yes, that's Justin George's question, Phil, and this is Mary from staff. So if you see what's in part two, the table, the more detailed table, where we stopped was the ICANN 60 meeting. We focused on the list of initial charter questions for two reasons. One is that that's already a fairly long list. Secondly, that until the group agreed on the approach, we weren't sure it would be appropriate for us to take specific suggestions that came in after the first discussion on this and put them in the table and suggest topics based on it. So there were a few suggestions that came in, I believe, by email, possibly on a subsequent call. We're happy to incorporate them, but at the moment, this table does not include those few.
Okay. Thanks for that explanation, Mary. And I agree that until we have a further discussion of whether this approach is something the working group wants to proceed with, we should neither reject nor accept those additional suggestions for questions, but deal with those after we've agreed on an overall approach. And with that, I'm going to call on Susan Payne.
Hi. Thanks very much for that, Susan. I just wanted to make a quick point related to the charter questions that are in part two, and I think this probably follows on from what you were just saying. If we do take this approach and we go down this route, and I think as explained by Jay Scott on the last call where we discussed this, it made a lot of sense to me and to many others on the call. Then my understanding of that is that part one is essentially how we're going to approach our work.
Was that a question, Susan, or just a statement? Hello?
I think we lost her, Phil.
Oh, have we lost Susan? Okay. Maybe that's why I was confused about the point of her statement. But let's go to Rebecca, and then we'll get back to Susan as soon as she's back on audio. Rebecca, please go ahead.
Rebecca Kushner, thank you. I have no objection in principle to this approach. I think it can be useful for structuring things, but there's one problem I think that is creating a lot of conceptual problems, which is the characterization of the stuff at the top of, I think it's page 3 of the document, the thing that says note for additional reference. So these are 5 questions that I take it the drafters of this approach didn't think fit into any of the categories. And the reason is that they are structurally they are structuring questions, right? So they are about the overall program, what it's supposed to do, and its unintended consequences. So I think that if we're going to go this way, and like I said, I have no particular objection to that, these questions actually need to be moved to the top. They have to be the questions that we are asking about the overall program so that all questions are asked with these issues in mind. And if we did that, then I think a lot of issues about, you know, has anything been left out would go away as the approach would be.
Yeah, excuse me, Rebecca. I just want to interrupt. I'm hearing some back talk in the background. If someone is speaking, please mute your phone. Yeah, sorry for the interruption, Rebecca, but it was starting to be noticed in the chat room.
Yes, and thank you. I appreciate it. The reason that these questions don't fit in is that they are kind of the core questions, right? So are there overall things that need to be moved? We change one thing. We need to change other things, right? So I would just put them at the top and go from there. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for that, Rebecca. And just to clarify, you're talking about the 5 questions at the top of page 3, correct?
Rebecca Tushnet, yes, that's correct.
Okay, and I'm still hearing back talk. Would whoever is talking and hasn't muted their phone please do so? It's extremely distracting as we try to have this conversation. I would just say, as one of the co-chairs, I would agree that these five questions are overarching questions that we have to consider in some way as well. And with that, well, I'm glad to see Susan back online and hopefully with audio. So let's return to Susan.
I'm so sorry about that. I don't know what happened to my phone. Yeah, and I'm afraid I didn't hear what Rebecca was saying except at the very end. And so I have a suspicion that I'm going to be saying the opposite to the point that she was making, but I'm not certain. So apologies for that. But what I was saying was, as we discussed on the previous time we discussed this document, Jay Scott's explanation of it, which I think many of us kind of got on board with, was the idea that part two is really solely to identify how we reached part one, how the five overarching sort of areas and topics that are listed in part one were identified, and that once we've used the charter questions in section two to do that, we then almost sort of put them to one side. We don't need to answer them in detail because the overarching topics will be addressed in the course of our work dealing with part one. And as a consequence, we don't then need to go through and redraft those charter questions for neutrality, for non-bias, for non-presumptive language. And if that is the approach that we're proposing, then that seems like a good one to me. But I think it would be extremely helpful to have a statement very clearly to that effect so that we don't have a confusion further down the line about what we're doing with this document. And if that isn't the approach that we agree on, then we need to go through those charter questions and redraft them all because they aren't neutral and they are biased and they do presume outcomes. So I think the idea and the proposal from Heather and that was taken on by Jay Scott was that's why we're trying this alternative approach, so that we don't have to spend the time wordsmithing those charter questions. But we all need to be clear that that's what we're doing, and I think the document needs to reflect that. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks for that, Susan. I think you raised some very important points. And now my co-chair, Jay Scott, and then to be followed by the other co-chair. Go ahead, Jay Scott.
Thanks. This is Jay Scott Evans for the record. Yeah. Susan encapsulated what I had sort of summarized at the end of the 30th call. The idea is that chart two or part two is merely informative so that when we do our report, we can show here are the questions that we sussed out that this was the overarching issue, right? And against that overarching issue, we ask these objective questions. And we ask the same questions, right, against each overarching issue. And that gave us this information. And with that information, here is what we say with regards to timing, X, Y, Z, you know. But that way, the whole idea was to – and I'm speaking on behalf of Heather here, but I believe the whole idea was, as Susan just stated, to take out that we need to go through all these questions. I think you can look at a biased question and say, well, what they're really asking about is the timing adequate or is it fair? Or so we ask those questions. We ask, you know, what was the original purpose of this? And has it been fulfilled, you know? Are there any unintended consequences? And those kinds of questions against these type of things we sussed out of those questions. They're concerned about the appeal time. They're concerned about the cost. They're concerned about response fees and ask these standard objective questions about it. Now, also, I'd like to address some of Rebecca's comments. I'm not saying I don't think these questions need to be considered, these additional reference questions. But how in the world do you get an answer to question number one? Do the RPMs adequately address issues of registrant protection, such as freedom of expression and fair use? I mean, that's an opinion question, it seems to me. I don't know what objective factor you would get and how you would demonstrate that, but I'm not saying they shouldn't be considered. And so when I looked at Griffin's comments in the chat room, I tend to agree with him. Maybe these questions need to be asked, but only after we've collected all this information and we can say, well, based on what we saw, it appears that this is working adequately and it must be a balance. And I don't know, we can draw some conclusions from those objective facts. But I'm not saying that they shouldn't be asked. I'm just wondering if we ask these questions all up front and that's the first thing we consider, I'm not so sure we have anything to inform that decision with. If we ask all these objective questions, we go through each stage and we get some answers and some objective material, perhaps we can extrapolate an answer from those objective, that objective material. And just so everyone knows, we are under a great deal of pressure right now because we are going to have to push our timeline back due to the survey. And this was a thought when I heard Heather bring this up on the call on the 30th of a way to hopefully compress a lot of the time-consuming work that we've gone through with the other sections by trying to neutralize or objectify make objective the questions that we're asking the charter. Because again, I don't know if this is normally done, but as I recall from staff's understanding, these questions were not specifically drafted for this charter. They were drafted in response to a myriad of things over a period of years, and they were just sort of all raked together and put and dumped into this charter. So I don't think it's beyond us to say we see all this, but given the fact they're all sort of flavored with, you know, some sort of advocacy, we just took general topics that seemed to be raised by the questions. We asked objective questions against those. This is the material we received. Based on this, here are the conclusions that we've drawn. So that's sort of my thought process, and I will lower my hand and mute my phone.
Yeah, thanks, Jay Scott. And now the other co-chair, Kathy Kleiman. Go ahead, Kathy.
Hi, Kathy Kleiman. And I have to say, I've been very confused for the last 2 weeks since our late night Asia meeting. When we did trademark data, the trademark claims, Sunrise and the trademark clearinghouse database, we took the charter questions as sacred. They were our starting point. They were our guiding point. And yes, we tried to make them more neutral, but we didn't depart from them. And I'm not sure neutrality is our best guidepost here either. The Jeff Newman rule. I don't know if Jeff's on the call. Yes, Jeff's on the call. So Jeff, tell me if I'm getting it wrong. The Jeff Newman rule seems to be, if it's not broke, don't fix it. That we're looking at kind of what's off base, what's going on. So I think we're going to wind up doing a lot more work with this new way because I think a lot of stuff is being left out. For example, there's nothing about notice, and notice is a glaring problem that we saw when we talked with Doug and John. Notice, do people, what's the language of the notice? Is it being translated the way it's supposed to, not the complaint, the notice itself? Is it being received? Is there time to respond? Why do we have so many defaults? Nowhere in the list of suggested URS topics, but yet glaring in our discussion. Yes, there are ways to address. Are registrants being protected by this ultra-fast, ultra-cheap method such that freedom of expression and fair use are preserved? WIPO looked at similar topics when it compiled its October overview of WIPO panel views on selected UDRP questions. If they can look at it for UDRP, we can look at it for URS. So the idea of jettisoning critical charter questions that, again, were critical for our first part of phase one, but no longer seem to be as critical now. due process is not a biased question, and that's really what we're being asked. And if we're jettisoning part two, if it's optional, if suddenly it's going away, then I think we're losing a lot of what we got from our stakeholder groups, and I don't think we're serving the purpose that we were brought here for as a review team, to review this, to see if there are problems, and a lot of those problems have been flagged for us. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks, Kathy. And Rebecca, your turn again.
Rebecca Tushnet, thank you. So I just want to address one issue, which is this apparent use of the term objective. I don't think we've defined it in a way that makes sense. If the question, if one can answer the question, is the original purpose being fulfilled, I take it that the original purpose was to sufficiently protect trademark owners while not too much disrupting the rights of without disrupting the rights of legitimate registrants. That is not a question that one can answer without the exercise of judgment. So if your meaning of objective is it requires judgment to answer as opposed to counting, then we're not asking objective questions. If your meaning of objective is the question itself doesn't express a bias towards one group or another, then I'm a little more okay with that. But it's still an important question to ask, right? So are there harms to free speech going on? Or if we make changes, what collateral consequences will there be, right? And that's something worth keeping in mind as you make specific recommendations for parts of the process, right? So what will happen elsewhere if you do that? That's why I would want to keep these questions, even if they require the exercise of judgment, just like questions, the suggested question two and question four. Judgment is not a dirty word, and it's not the and objective is not really necessarily the helpful concept here. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for that. And now, Greg, see your hand up. Go ahead.
Thanks. This is Greg Shatton. My understanding of the word objective was very different from what Rebecca was thinking it might be. As I said in the chat, I was thinking that objective meant that the phrasing of the question itself was not biased or leading or slanted or loaded or trying to get a certain answer or a certain result. That the question itself was phrased in a neutral manner. The answers are absolutely going to require judgment and will get subjective inputs from different stakeholders and different answers. But it's the question. It's the way the question is phrased. With apologies for being politically incorrect, and one classic example of that is, when did you stop beating your wife? A question that is slanted or assumes certain facts not in evidence, or that's otherwise, reflects a strong point of view. It's not the subject matter, whether it's freedom of expression or notice. That's not the issue. It's really the way the questions themselves are phrased, that some of them are questions based on that have advocacy inherent in their drafting, regardless. And it's not the underlying subject matter that we're trying to, nor the answer that we are trying to make objective. It's just that we want to start out with neutral questions that no matter how you feel about the subject, you feel that the question is fair.
Okay, thank you, Greg, and back to Jay Scott, and then Kathy, and then I want to let this more philosophical discussion go on. I have a comment on my own I wish to make, but let me wait a bit on that. So Jay Scott and then Kathy after him.
Okay. This is J. Scott Evans for the record. I also want to make sure that we're clear that this is just a draft document. Today's discussion is to decide whether this approach, right, whether this approach, if we get consensus for this approach. If we do, then rather than going through and deciding each of the charter questions and how they should be worded and how they should be asked, we would then refine the questions. These are suggested that are in bold 1 through 5. And make sure that we come up and get consensus around those questions that seek, hopefully, objective materials or objective facts with regards to everything. But this isn't set in stone. The idea today is to decide whether the concept produced in this paper is acceptable. If so, then we would take a call or so to refine that concept. And then once it's adopted, we would start the work with applying that to the materials. Just wanted to make that clear. That's my understanding. And I think Mary said at the start of the statement, this is merely a draft. This doesn't mean if we decide today that we are locked into all the questions and we are locked into all the subjects, the review topics that have been outlined. What it is this is just a general draft. We agree with the concept, then we'll take it and take a couple of, hopefully a call or two, finish getting that worked up, get consensus around it, and then begin the actual work of going through the material, applying the questions, and getting ourselves some material for our report.
Okay. Thanks, Jay Scott. Kathy?
Yeah. Kathy Kleiman, I think we're going to wind up going down a path that will add considerable time to what we're doing, not take away from it. What I'm hearing, and Jay Scott and Heather haven't actually weighed in on it, but there seems to be a discrepancy of how we're viewing part one versus the reference questions, the additional reference questions, the 5 core questions, the overarching questions that Rebecca pointed out that do come from our charter, as well as part two, again, the charter questions. I don't know whether due process is considered to be a biased question, but that is ultimately, we're doing kind of a judicial review here, and so it's absolutely critical that we look at both sides, all sides, all participants, and if that's biased, then it has to be biased, because in the real world, we look at plaintiff's rights and defendant's rights, criminal rights, and those charging the criminal, and you look at it from different perspectives, and that's what seems to be kind of being gutted from the process, is those perspectives that did come to us from the stakeholder groups and that we considered extremely important in the first part of phase one, and now we're taking it out in phase two. So I think we're going to wind up. So we need a better understanding of what happens to those 5 core questions that Rebecca pointed out and whether we're just jettisoning part two, which is all of our charter questions. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Kathy. And I'm now going to recognize myself. I put myself in the queue, and these are completely personal comments, not in my capacity as a member of this working group, and not any attempt to dictate anything to the working group, and just kind of off the top of my head reactions to this. I'm going to divide this into 3 parts. In regard to the notes for additional reference and with the 5 questions at the top of page 3, this is a mixed bag of questions. Some of them are philosophical in nature. Some is the first one, do the RPMs adequately address issues of registrant protection, such as freedom of expression, fair use, they call on. I think the answers to that, you can look at the data on where the URS was used and which domains is affected, but ultimately there's a fair degree of subjective judgment involved in that. The second one, to what extent would changes to one RPM need to be offset by concomitant changes to the others? That's an overall question regarding the relationship between the various RPMs, although the URS kind of stands apart, to me, from things like the clearinghouse and trademark claims notice, so the receipt of a notice may play a role in determining a URS decision. Again, number three is somewhat philosophical and subjective. Number five, I'm not an expert in the human rights area. I'll leave that to others, but whether human rights should be taken into consideration and how in RPMs is a challenging question. The fourth question is one that in my new position as an employee of a legacy registry operator operating more than 140 million legacy domains, the question of whether URS should become consensus policy required to be implemented or applicable to all domains is one that we wish to look at carefully, that I'll be looking at carefully in that employment capacity. To some extent, that will depend on an evaluation of the quality of administration of the URS, and obviously if it's being administered very well, that's different from if it's not being administered in conformance with the applicable rules and policies, but we'll get to that. And then my colleague, David McCauley, has raised on a prior call the issue of potential registry liability because the URS, unlike the UDRP, operates at the registry level and not at the registrar level. And although that could change if we decided to put in a transfer capacity, I'm not advocating that or speaking against it at that point, but that's one. So we've got kind of a mixed bag of overarching questions here in terms of how they should be approached and how they would apply the charter questions. That's the first point. The second point that I'd make quickly is that I think the Part 2 chart, at least for me, I find this very helpful, that grouping the existing charter questions, and of course we're open to adding new questions if they're accepted by the group, under the particular issues such as standard of proof and defenses and remedies and subparts of that, I find it very helpful in terms of organizing our approach forward and understanding how these charter questions relate to the URS and to one another. So I think that's very helpful in that we should keep this table and utilize it and add to it regardless what we do with the suggested approach. Now, finally, in regard to the application of the suggested standard set of high-level questions to particular charter questions, that's the part I'm trying to understand and would invite further comment on once I stop talking. And let me just give two quick examples. On page 4 under standard of proof, item 1 is the charter question, is the URS clear and convincing standard of proof appropriate? And I think we know that standard was adopted because the URS is supposed to be for clear-cut black-and-white cases of infringement, kind of know it when you see it infringed. So for a question like that, that seems to me, you know, trying to apply the standard, proposed standard set of high-level questions, has it been used? Well, hopefully that standard has been used in every decision. What was the original purpose? We can get to that. Have there been unintended consequences? So I find these questions not that relevant to considering that charter question, because ultimately it's a policy question of whether the URS should remain that sufficiently separate from the UDRP standard or proof, or whether it should be lowered in some way, not likely to be made higher, because the only potential higher standard would be beyond a reasonable doubt, which is a criminal case standard. So on the next one, on page 4, and I'll go through this and then stop, are the expanded defenses of the URS being used, and if so, how, when, and by whom? Since it's asking whether those expanded defenses are being used, and if so, who used them, I find these suggested standard set of high-level questions more relevant. So particularly the first one, has it been used? Is the purpose being fulfilled, et cetera? So I guess what I'm saying is that when you look at the charter questions, I find personally this standard set of proposed high-level questions more appropriate and helpful for dealing with some than with others. And I probably said too much already. I'm going to stop there. I hope that's been of some use, and I invite further commentary on that or any other aspect of this discussion by other working group members. Thanks. And in the absence of working group hands up, I call on Mary Wong. Go ahead, Mary.
Thanks, Phil. And this is Mary from staff again. So that was the intent of this document, and I think as several people have stated, the intention overall was to see if the working group could agree on the approach being have a list of short topics and apply the same or a fairly similar set of high-level questions to each. Assuming that the group agrees on this approach, then the next couple of tasks would be to ask if the suggested list of topics need to be modified, either additions made because there are gaps they didn't capture, or deletions or modifications. Then the other task at that point would be, as you just said, Phil, to look at the high-level questions. And on this point, I note that several additional questions have been suggested by Claudio. And you've also noted something that we mentioned, that some of these questions may be more appropriate to some topics than others. So again, on the assumption that the working group agrees on this approach, that's what we on the staff side in preparing this document with Heather saw as the next step. Thank you.
Okay, thanks for that input, Mary. And I think that was helpful. And I see Claudio's hand up. Go ahead, Claudio.
Thanks, Phil. I do agree with this approach. I raised a question in the chat earlier, and I think Jay Scott responded to it. Really, my question was just in terms of these high-level questions, number 2, 3, and 4, refer to the original purpose, basically whatever the original policy purpose was of a particular element of the URS. And what I was wondering is, are we sort of coming at this from the perspective that that original purpose is valid and should not be changed in light of some of the things that we find? It seems like 2, 3, and 4 are framed in a way that suggests that that original purpose should essentially be maintained. And I'm just kind of throwing it out there, like, whether, you know, is that correct? Like, do we want to stick with that approach, or is it possible that we might find some evidence that suggests that there was an original policy purpose for one of these particular provisions and that should be changed? And that, you know, original policy element should no longer be in place. I wasn't sure if these 5 high-level questions sort of, you know, address that point. So just wanted to mention it. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks for that, Claudio. And, again, speaking personally, as I just explained in my previous commentary, I think these questions, these suggested set of high-level questions seem more relevant to some of the charter questions than others. We might review some sample of the charter questions and decide if this is the right set of high-level questions and whether we have to add to them or modify them somewhat. And thinking about it a bit further on my own, it seems to me that in approaching our review of the URS, there are kind of theory and practice. The theory is the policy, and the practice is the actual administration of the policy and what we're seeing in terms of intended or unintended consequences. And these these questions to me seem more relevant to the practice part of the equation rather than the theory, where you get into more policy debates about whether the original decisions in shaping the policy were correct and balanced. But I don't want to monopolize the conversation. Claudia, your hand's still up. It's not down now. Look, we've got 43 people on this call. I'm happy to call on Kathy again, but this is the opportunity for working group members to weigh in. Nobody's going to jump on you and state your view as to whether this approach is useful or not, and if useful, whether as proposed it's good or we need to modify it somewhat. So, Kathy, I'll call on you again, hopefully for a quick comment, and then I see Christine is behind you. Go ahead, Kathy.
Thanks, Phil. Kathy Kleiman, and I think it was your comment, but you know, there have been a lot of comments since I spoke, that part two of the table is really, really helpful. And so I almost think that, you know, I want to agree that jettisoning part two, where I really get confused, is not on the high-level questions, although, and I just want to add, it's been proposed many times, hasn't been used. If not, why not, has been proposed many times, so I think we should add that. But it's this isolated part one draft list of suggested URS review topics that kind of isolate what the underlying charter questions were. It's part two that does correlate the suggested topics to the underlying questions that we've been asked and to our job as a review team. They do need to add those core questions the overarching questions that Rebecca pointed out, because those are charter questions. But it's a table where everything comes together and where we kind of understand what is the question that's, whether it's biased or not, what is the question, and then, you know, that extrapolation to the topic. I do have a procedural question for staff, who pointed out that Claudia has proposed some new questions in the chat, which I haven't had a chance to review. But as George Kukias pointed out, we've had a number of suggested questions also pointed out over the last few weeks of discussion. So are we jettisoning those or including those as well? Procedural question for staff. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks, Kathy. And just chime in quickly before Christine talks. I think when you look at the bottom of page 7 and top of page 8, those general charter questions appear again. They could easily be incorporated into another section of the chart titled General Charter Questions, and with some topic being assigned to them. I think the individual questions, some apply to some of these other charter questions, some may not. But with that, I'm going to call on Christine.
So this is Christine. Can I defer to Mary in case she wants to answer Kathy's question? Thank you, and then I'll step
back
in.
Sure, sure.
Thanks, Christine. I'll make this quick. So to answer Kathy's procedural question, there are actually two types of additional questions / suggestions that have been brought forward since we met at ICANN 60. One is the kind of question that George and Maxine brought forward, and we've taken note of those. Those, we believe, are questions that, if I may say so, are somewhat substantive in the sense that they were meant to be added to the list of charter questions, and so they may well yield additional topics. The second type of question is the kind that Claudio suggested, in chat today and also early on the email list, and those questions were meant to add to or supplement the list of high-level questions in Part 1. In both cases, we have taken note of all of them. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for that, Mary, and back to Christine.
Hi, this is Christine for the transcript. So I know Susan's question in the chat about maybe not knowing where what the proposal is, and I think I'm following Jay Scott's proposal, and I want to clarify because I also am not entirely sure, and I want to be sure I'm correct. For the Sunrise and the claims subteams, we sat down and did essentially the same exercise. We started out with the questions, is this serving its intended purpose, is it not, what are the big picture problems, and then we dove into the specific questions that had been slightly, you know, had been reworded or altered to be more neutral and not, you know, obviously state, you know, an opinion of one side or the other. And that was, you know, relatively short. I think there were maybe 4 or 6 pages of Sunrise total charter questions, and there were maybe, you know, two pages for claims, because really there's only a couple of processes. You know, for claims, you can have a couple of options. For Sunrise, you can have a couple of options. And then we just had to dig around into the different parties and try to figure out who was being affected, how, and why. Here, I think it's very similar. If you look at questions 1 through 5, it's essentially the same starting point. We're saying, how are these being used? What is, you know, what's working, what's not working? And we're following the Jeff Newman rule by asking these questions up front. And we ask this, and then in doing so, we sort of dissect the entire URF into the various constituent components. In doing so, of course, some of those detailed Part 2 questions will come up into the analysis. We'll start filling in that chart, and we'll start, you know, adding more charter questions, taking out charter questions, that sort of thing. And maybe I'm riffing on what Jay Scott suggested. Maybe I'm saying something different, but I want to know, because this is my understanding of the process. We're doing something similar to what we did with the other two subteams, except for this has got to be bigger and deeper, because it is a bigger and deeper process than just, hey, did you have a 30 or a 60-day Sunrise? So I feel like I'm rambling a little bit, and I'm going to stop, but I just want to make clear that I think we're essentially doing the same thing, but it's bigger and longer and deeper. So our overview questions are, is it working, is it not? That's going to be a bigger, deeper analysis, followed by our charter questions. And if you look at Part 2, I think almost every single question asks for a conclusion. Should we change something? Well, we won't know until we've done 1 through 5 on every single one of those constituent pieces, and then we can go back and decide if we should change something. So I'm sorry I have a cold. I hope everybody understood me, and I'll stop now. Thank you.
Christine, you sound pretty good for someone with a cold. Thanks for those comments. I found them useful. Back to Greg.
Thanks, Greg Shatton. I'm overall supportive of this, of what I believe I understand the process that is currently being suggested to be. I think, you know, there will be, it's somewhat of an iterative process, in that we, I think, need to keep those 5 overarching questions in mind. But one of the things I really like about the kind of the topic-based process is that it will kind of lead us into actually preparing our report, having information arranged in a way that can ultimately that will quite easily be turned into a report, as opposed to requiring a whole drafting process afterwards. I'm overall in favor, and I think it also, you know, if we, a topic basis does keep kind of the, you know, question bias issue out too. You know, due process can be a topic. How you ask about it can betray how you feel about it and what you feel the answer should be. So we'll still have the issue when we get to the questions underneath. Of keeping the questions neutral. The answers will be a whole other thing, and that's where, you know, the fun should happen. If the fun happens in the questions and tended to shut out certain possible answers or favor certain possible answers, that's a problem in the process, and that should be cleaned up. Thanks.
Thanks, Craig. You know, as a personal comment again from this co-chair, as this discussion continues, again, I want to reiterate, I think the chart and breaking the chart, classifying the chart of questions by topic is excellent and will really be helpful in our work. I think these suggested set of high-level questions are useful, but not always appropriate. And let me give another example from the chart. On page 5 under cost allocation, cost allocation model, first question is the cost allocation model for the URS appropriate and justifiable? That's somewhat of a, there's some policy part of that. There's also going to be, you know, has it been used? Has the response fee been triggered in certain cases? The other questions you can't ask, has it been used, because should there be a loser pays model? Well, it doesn't exist now. That's a policy question. The other question, how can costs be lowered so end users can more easily access RPMs? Again, that's a general question. We can look at the current costs, but we can't look at has a method to lower costs been useful, you know, been used, because it doesn't exist yet. So I'm thinking that this approach embodied in the suggested standard set of high-level questions is going to be useful for some of our charter questions and not that relevant for others, and we should be selective in its application. And I think similarly, some of the charter questions can be approached without much further modification, and some of them we may have to tinker with because they're based on assumptions which may not be valid, or they may ask a question that is a leading question that's trying to get a particular answer rather than an objective data-based answer. So, again, I'll stop there and we can continue this discussion, or we can seek an informal feedback from the group on this approach. So, and I think if we do that, we ought to break it up. And so let me propose this. I think we need at least two questions, and I defer to my co-chairs and other working group members on whether these are the right questions. I think the first question, and I suspect this is less contentious, is whether the part two chart approach to classifying the charter questions under particular suggested topics that relate to the actual application and policy of the URS is useful, that can, and I would presume in that question we're assuming that the general charter questions listed at the top of page 7 and onto the top of page 8 are going to be incorporated into that chart in some manner, that this chart is not a fixed object at this point of time, that as the working group agrees to consider other potential questions in our work, that they would be added to this chart under the proper topic. So the first question would be, is the division of the charter questions into this topic set useful and appropriate and something we should utilize going forward? I think the second question would be whether the application of standard high-level questions as appropriate to charter questions is a useful approach for dealing with and answering the charter questions, and with the caveat that the suggested set we have on page 1 may be subject to modification. So let me stop there and see if those two proposed draft questions seem like a good way to gauge support or opposition of the working group members on this call. And once we take that indication, of course, so we don't decide any of this on just a call because many members are not on a particular call, but we would put a preliminary output out on the working group email list for further discussion and consideration of all working group members. So do my co-chairs or any other working group members have any response to those proposed questions to put to the group? Yeah, Jay Scott, go ahead.
Well, I think the better thing to ask is everybody comfortable with moving forward with this approach? And if the answer to that high-level question, not to be redundant, is yes, then we need to then come back and work on what high-level questions are we going to ask. So, you know, this is just a draft. It's not set in stone. So you need to say, well, are we comfortable with this? Because the way as we've been talking in the chat, I can see that we can ask high-level questions that are objective that would inform specific questions. And so there's a question that Susan put into the chat about fees. And if we look at fees and we ask, what's the original purpose? Bearing in mind the original purpose, are there unintended consequences? All of those things. I could see if there's a yes or no to any of those questions, then it might inform how we then answer the more specific question that may actually be biased. But we don't need to get into that because we've extrapolated an objective answer that answers the question. And so, you know, that's the whole point, is to look at the general topics of these questions, suss from those. What are the issues they're trying to get at? Fees, appeal, that. Then ask a set of objective questions against those, and then whatever information comes in on those objective questions, then to look at that. Now, it may be, as Phil has said, that when we get to one, we find out that, okay, we don't have any information to ask that. And so maybe then we need to get into the problem of trying to draft a neutral question at the time. But I just think we can get a lot of information that would inform the question. And then it doesn't matter how the actual charter question was asked, because we sussed out what they were concerned about: appeal timing, fee cost, response fees. And we asked a lot of questions against those that were objective. We got an answer. And then we looked at the specific question and we applied the answer we got from the questions generally would be the same answer. So that's sort of my point.
Okay. Jay Scott, before I got a catch,
we have to ask ourselves at this point, are we comfortable with going forward with this methodology? And then if that's a yes, then we can get into, have we sussed out the right things? Are these the right questions? Should we have one set of questions that we ask one set of high-level topics against and another set of questions that get a different set of high-level topics because of, as Phil picked out, they're going to different purposes? We can get into all that detailed work once we agree on the methodology.
Okay. Jay Scott, just for my own clarification, I'm not trying to be too much of a lawyer here, but when you want to pose a question whether working group members are comfortable with this approach, which I presume is the approach of using a standard set of high-level questions to be applied to each topic on the list. Is that correct?
Well, it would be yes, and that we use the specific charter questions to come up with that list of topics, you know, the broader base topics at the 60,000-foot level. And then are we comfortable, you know, with this methodology? If so, then we'll get into, have we covered everything? Are these the right questions? That we'll get into the details after we've decided this methodology is correct.
Okay. And just one further question for clarification. Would answering that question yes prevent any member of the working group from suggesting that some of these, that the five questions we have on page one now might be subject to modification or addition? If you support the approach, does that mean you're locked into these questions, or can we have further discussion of question modification? I just want
to. When you're talking about question modification, I guess what I would suggest is, when I'm thinking, are you talking about looking at the specific question down in part two and saying, okay, the question with regards to fees is biased and we need to ask it in a more neutral way? the whole point of doing it this way is hopefully to avoid that discussion. If what you're saying is we have three questions with regards to appeal, but someone on the list has suggested that there might be an additional question that should be added there, I don't think there's anything wrong with that approach. If there's, you know, that kind of thing, it's looking at the questions, are the questions on this topic, is this everything that needs to be asked? You know, those kinds of things that want to be put into that chart. If we want to add to questions under a subject matter, I can't imagine I'm not suggesting that wouldn't be available to the group. But at some point, we have to fish or cut bait.
Okay, I'm going to stop asking questions, and let's hear from Kathy Kleiman, the other co-chair.
This is Kathy. I understood your questions, Phil. Jay Scott, I have to say I'm more confused now. So the methodology is the question. What is the methodology we're being asked to accept? I think we've heard that there is agreement on high-level questions because this is the kind of approach we've been doing all along. I think we've heard that there's great confusion about part one, the draft list of suggested URS review topics as an isolated exercise because it takes us away from the charter questions, and that there is general support for part two, which is these suggested topics as a guidepost and as an organization, as an organizing piece for the charter questions. But the idea of leaving the charter questions, I think, is concerning here. They are, you know, again, how do you neutralize judicial process? Is it fair? Is it balanced? I don't think we have to give those questions up. Thanks.
Okay. Rebecca, go ahead. Your hand's up.
Thank you, Rebecca Tashnet. So I guess let me just say again, as I said in the chat, I can support an approach of this type. I just can't support an approach where the core questions are treated as nice-to-haves at the end of the, you know, structure as opposed to the point of the exercise. So, you know, in this version, no, because they're basically put aside the key questions about the overall evaluation. Thank you.
Yeah, Rebecca, let me respond personally. I think those questions that you refer to as the core questions are always out there, and that any member is free to raise them at any time in regard to any of the charter questions and the topics they address. They're not suppressed. They're always available when they relate to a specific concern of any working group member. So I don't think they're put aside. Let me state this again as a personal statement. I'm generally comfortable with the approach of using a standard set of high-level questions. My one caveat being that I'm not sure that this list we have before us today should be accepted as the final list. There may be some other question we should ask. I think we need a little time to think about that. I'm also not quite sure what question five means. How many managed to prevail? How would that be applied to something like the standard of proof for a URS? And does that mean that if a complainant didn't prevail because it wasn't a black-and-white case and didn't meet the standard, is that an issue that would argue for changing? So I really think we need some wordsmithing on number five. I'm not clear what it means or whether there's some bias in it. But if we could address the approach question and having some flexibility to have some further discussion of the standard set of high-level questions, or in its absence, I see in the chat room, my colleague David McCauley said, note that we have the flexibility to adapt and some of these questions to specific topics, so change them in some way. That would might be acceptable too. Susan, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Phil. So I think the point is that the question is, do we like the approach of having those overarching questions? I think then, you know, it may be that there aren't five, there might be four, there might be six. It might be that we look at number five and we go, that one only applies on, you know, in three circumstances, but we think it's still worth having. Or we might go, actually, that's not really the right question. What we need is a different question. But I think we need a bit of, you know, if we're going to take this approach, I think we need to, you know, to kind of consider what those questions are. And it might be that, particularly number five, you know, we've all highlighted that we don't think it applies to every single topic. But I think that's fine. My understanding, it was always my understanding, but I obviously didn't express it very well at the beginning, is that what we're trying to do is, when we're asking those questions about these subject areas, like complaint, response, et cetera, we ask those questions to elicit the information that information then lets us go back and answer the chartered questions. But in answering those chartered questions, we know we have a question which is written down, which is, should the response fee for more than 15 names continue to apply? So that's one question. But in the course of our eliciting of information, we'll also be similarly considering, when we answer that charter question, the related charter questions. You know, should it apply, should it be raised? Should it actually apply for all, you know, for all responses, not just if it's more than 15 names? You know, should there be no response fee? You know, there's kind of like a number of different versions of that question, which are all basically the same topic. So we shouldn't be wedded to the fact that we've currently got this only one iteration. We have to be, you know, we have to neutralize it. And that's what I meant by having the neutral questions, because that's only asking, you know, should we take away the response fee for more than 15 names? But in fact, there's a whole other series of questions relating to response fees that we actually need to answer.
Okay, thanks, Susan. I had seen Mary's hand up, just went down. I don't know if Mary had a statement. I want to try to get to closure on this. We've got 16 minutes left. We've had a long discussion. Yeah, go ahead, Mary.
Thanks, Phil. I put my hand down because I put my comment in the chat, because it seems to staff listening to this call that there may be some confusion between various things. The basic fundamental question that the group was asked was whether the approach Scott tried to summarize is something the group agrees on. And we're suggesting that we separate that fundamental question from the other questions as to whether the list of topics themselves are complete and whether the high-level questions we're going to ask for each topic are accurate or whether they should be adapted in David McCauley's terminology. It seems to us that we have to answer the fundamental question first. Is the approach, as summarized by Jay Scott, something the working group can agree to before we approach the other questions of what the topic should be and what the high-level question should be?
Okay. Thanks for that, Mary. All right. I want to try to get to some feedback from the group here. And let me say, I noticed Jeff Newman stated in the chat that the big objectors to J. Scott's methodology are two of the co-chairs. Jeff, I have to disagree with that. I stated a couple minutes ago I'm comfortable with the approach of approaching the charter questions with a standard set of high-level questions. I'm just uncomfortable with accepting these five questions as the final list, and if we could have some assurance that there might be some further modification or addition to this list of standard questions on a future call or in future email discussions. I'm fine on the approach. I'm just not sure this is a totally complete list, and as noted, I'm just not sure of what question five is asking and whether it's truly objective. But on approach, I'm not opposed to the approach. So let me ask this. I would propose to ask two questions. I don't think we need one on the use of the chart, because the comments on the chart and the division of charter questions into relevant topics seems to be well received and no objections have been heard. I would propose, subject to objection from anyone in the working group, that we first ask the question of whether working group members are comfortable with the approach of applying a standard set of high-level questions to be applied to each topic on the list, and folks would indicate by agree or disagree whether they agree with approach. And then I would hope to ask a second question of whether the working group should have some ability to further address the proposed five questions we have on page one, and perhaps be have some flexibility in modifying or adding to them as we apply the approach to the topics. So is that two-question approach? I'm seeing check marks. I don't know if they're check marks on the first question or on my suggested approach of two questions. So let me ask a first question. Who thinks asking those two questions in the sequence described is okay? And if you agree with that, just click agree. And if you disagree, click disagree. I'm not seeing everyone responding, but all the marks so far are green. I'm going to give this another.
Do you mind repeating? I have no idea what you're asking. Sorry, I'm being really dim.
Excuse me? I couldn't hear that question.
Sorry, I just said, would you mind terribly repeating what the question is? I'm sorry.
I am asking whether working group members are okay with asking the two questions I just proposed in the sequence I proposed. The first question would be, do you agree with adopting an approach, the proposed approach of using a standard set of high-level questions to be applied to each topic? The second question would be, should the working group have some flexibility on modifying or adding to the questions that we have before us as we actually apply those to the topics and learn with experience how to use them. So, and the check marks I'm seeing now are on that two-question approach. And I see all green and no red. So why do you take your marks down? And let me ask the first question. And the first question is, do working group members agree or disagree with the proposed approach of using a standard set of high-level questions to be applied to each topic on the list that are reflected in the chart in Part 2 of our document? So that is the question. Do you agree with the general approach of a standard set of questions for dealing with the topics and the related charter questions? Okay, I'm seeing all green check marks. Not everyone has responded, but everyone who has responded has agreed, and no one has disagreed. So if anyone wants to disagree vehemently, I'll take oral comments, but I think we have a good indication of consensus support for the general approach. So I'm going to ask everyone to now clear their marks, and I'll ask the second question. Okay, and the second question, I'll try to state it as clearly as possible. Do working group members agree that in applying this approach, the working group should have some flexibility going forward in modifying or adding to the standard set of high-level questions presently contained on page one of the document before us. That is for the purpose of not being locked into those questions as final and immutable. And so that's the question. And again, I'm seeing a sea of green marks and no disagrees. I see one hand up. I'm going to call on you, Rebecca, as soon as we finish taking this indication of the feelings of those on this call. And so I think we can call the question. All the marks have been agree and none disagree, which means that we're agreed on the standard, the approach of standard set of questions, and we've left ourselves room to modify or add to these questions as we go forward and actually do our work and see which of them work and which don't. So we can clear all of that now. And I'm going to call on Rebecca. And go ahead, Rebecca.
Rebecca Tushnet. I wish I'd gotten to ask this first, but my understanding of what you just asked would be then we actually have not even settled on those five questions as the things that we might adapt in any particular case. We are actually still formulating the standard set of questions themselves, and I just want to make that clear because I think there's a difference between saying we're going to start and, you know, you can make the case for modifying them in any given situation versus we need to have a standard set and this is what should be in the standard set. Thank you.
Yeah, my own reading is that we've agreed on a methodology, but we've left ourselves open to modify some of the details of that methodology as we go forward.
Apologies, but I'm not sure that fully gets to my distinction. The details include sort of what the standard we're going to work from. So is it your understanding that we've agreed that we are not yet even set on the five standard questions?
My understanding and personal understanding, other working group members may have a different view, is that the five questions on page one are a starting point, but that we have not foreclosed the ability of working group members to propose modifications of those questions or additions to those questions as we move forward and apply this standard approach to individual topics and the relevant charter questions that relate to those topics.
So,
that's
okay.
My understanding.
Okay. So I think actually then I'm voting against because I don't think we are settled on what the question should be. And I don't think we should have to fight over changes for each individual one. Do you see the distinction that I'm making? I mean, it sounds to me like you're saying we're agreed on these questions, and then we can discuss individual variations as we go topic by topic. But although I'm okay with the approach in general, I'm definitely not okay with these questions as the ones. And I'd rather not do it every time we come through a topic. Thank you.
Okay. Your change of vote is noted for the record. Jay Scott, and I'm noting that we have five minutes left on
never
call.
Voted. I never agreed. Excuse me. I did not. That's why I had my hand up. Thank you.
Okay. So you didn't agree or disagree. Okay. Jay Scott, go ahead.
Okay. I just want to be really clear because I've said this five times. Mary said it three times in the chat, and apparently people aren't understanding. What you see before you is a draft. It is a suggestion. The question we've asked is this methodology something you want to move forward with? Those people who did respond, from what I saw and what Phil read into the record, there were no disagrees other than the one that now Rebecca has voiced. There were all agrees. There were a lot of no votes. But the majority were agrees with the methodology. What I've said before, what Mary said, and what I'll say again is, now we move to consideration of this draft. And the consideration of this draft is, are the five questions the questions we're going to ask? Do they need to be modified? Do there need to be different questions? This is not saying it's there have been suggestions put out there for us to consider. This is in no way something that is set in stone, and now that you've agreed to this methodology, you said, well, all the questions and all the topics, that's the way it's set. This is a draft for consideration by the group, and for the group then to decide, provided we don't take 6 to 8 weeks to decide, if these are the right questions. If not, which questions would be better? Are these the right questions? But they need to be, the wording needs to be slightly changed. Those are the things we'll consider as we move forward, hopefully in a call or two. But that is what was proposed at the beginning by Mary. That is what Phil asked for when he asked for the flexibility to be able to consider that. And that's what I believe we have agreed to, is we're going to go with this methodology. Now, the next step that we've decided with this methodology is to consider this draft. And once we get consensus around the draft, it will become our permanent work plan with regards to the URS, and we will move forward with that plan as drafted and agreed upon by the group. I hope I have been clear. In other words, there's nothing set in stone other than the methodology, not the specifics of it. This is a draft plan for consideration by the working group. And Mary, if I've misstated anything in what we thought we were presenting, I apologize. Please feel to correct me. But that is my understanding of what we were putting forward today.
Okay. All right, Kathy, and then I'm going to hear from Kathy, and then we're in the last minute. I'm going to wrap up this call with suggestions for what staff should do with aftermath of this call. Kathy, go ahead.
And to add to the summary of what I heard, and I wanted to add because a lot of broad terms are being used. This is Kathy, of course. That the table is a critical and central part of our work. There was some talk about jettisoning part two, but that, to my understanding, Phil, from the way you phrased the questions, that the table with the topics, but also with the charter questions, is going to be a critical foundation of our work. That we're not leaving it aside, but we're carrying it with us as part of this methodology. Thanks.
Yeah, and Kathy, as Jay Scott just stated, what we have before us is a draft subject to modification by the working group. So I would suggest that. I want to thank everyone who participated today, and including all of those who showed their agreement or disagreement with the questions toward the end. I think we made good progress in agreeing on an approach going forward. I would ask staff to put out on the mailing list for this working group a summary of what the working group decided today, those participating, so that other members who are not on the call can see that and comment on it, whether they support the consensus we saw today or have some objections or concerns. And I would ask staff to attach that email to circulate this draft document and invite working group members to think about whether they want changes or additions to it so we can start making this a final document for our work as soon as practicable. So with that, I again thank everyone. Happy holidays. Best wishes for the new year. Staff, when is our next call? First call in January?
Hi, Phil. It's Terry.
This is Mary from staff. And actually, I put my app at. Sorry, Terry, you want to go ahead?
Oh, no, sorry about that. So I do have the next meeting Wednesday, January 3rd at 1800 UTC.
Okay. Well, thank you. And the co-chairs will consult with one another and decide whether when we have that meeting, it might make sense to go straight back to this draft document and start trying to make it more of a final document to assist us in moving forward in our URS evaluation. And then that co-chair suggestion for evaluation of the administration of the URS by the accredited providers might be a topic better suited to a later call. But we can discuss all that and get back to the working group with our views on that. So with that, thank you, and have a very great holidays, happy new year, and look forward to working with everyone in 2018 and moving forward on our work. Thank you.
Thank you. Once again, the meeting has been adjourned. Thank you very much for joining.